This morning, as we look at 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 through 16, 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 through 16, I want us to think of this question: Lord, why me? Lord, why me? 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 through 16. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. But rejoice, inasmuch as you are partakers of Christ's suffering, that when his glory shall be revealed, you may be glad also with exceeding joy. If you be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. On their part he's evil spoken of, but on your part he is glorified. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters. Yet if any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf. Lord, why me? Most of the time, we react predictably when we find ourselves faced with persecution and with suffering. And that predictable reaction is generally the question, Lord, why me? And I can very well imagine that these Christian people to whom Peter's writing here asked themselves that question as they were faced with severe persecution and suffering. Lord, why us? But I think we ought to ask another question when we look at God and say, Lord, why me? And that question is, Lord, why not me? Why do I claim exemption from persecution and suffering? On what grounds do I say, Lord, why me? Now, for things prosperous and for things that bring material prosperity and happiness to our lives, we always rejoice that God has chosen us. We always thank God effusively for all the good things that come to us, and we bless His name for having chosen us. But for trials and for suffering, when we're chosen, we petulantly ask God, why me? And we should ask ourselves, why not us? If God needs those who suffer, then why not you? And why not me? Sometimes we react when we're chosen to suffer for the cause of Jesus Christ as though God had in some fashion stabbed us in the back. That God isn't living up to His promises. That God has in some way tricked us into becoming Christians, and then after we became Christians, God threw all this difficult stuff at us. And if we'd really known better, we would not have chosen this way to live. But under the encouragement of a silver-tongued evangelist, we were coaxed down the aisle and made to believe that everything would go better with Christ, just as it does with Coca-Cola. There is an easy way out of becoming a martyr and becoming a persecuted and suffering Christian, and you may want to take your pen and pencil and write down this name and address. It's entitled Certificate of Martyrdom. Long-suffering saints may at last claim recognition. If they've had three tragic events in their life, they're eligible for a quotation mark, Certificate of Martyrdom from the Church of World Peace in Denver, Colorado. The martyrdom certificate contains these words. Now, this is what you can order from this particular group that are located in Denver, Colorado. You'll get this certificate to hang on your wall. The suffering you have had to endure at the hands of life has been almost more than any one person can bear. Rarely has such a noble soul been forced to put up with so much undeserved agony. In recognition of your extraordinary plight, the Church of World Peace hereby awards this certificate of martyrdom. Your name shall remain in the church archives in perpetuity. Yes, in the quotation. Yes, there is a $5 fee. One wonders whether parting with the sum will qualify as one of the tragic events. You know, if you've had two, then the $5 charge would make it three. Or only mark one as the proverbial fool soon parted from his money. But for $5, you can get a real certificate that you are a legitimate martyr. I don't think this is really what Peter had in mind. I don't think it's what Jesus had in mind. For Peter teaches these readers to take such suffering that comes from the convictions that they possess, to take that kind of persecution and suffering in stride. Peter said, "Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you." The word strange means novel or astonishing. Peter's really saying, "Brethren, do not be astonished that a test of fire is being applied to you as though this was some abnormal experience." We tend to look at everything that happens to us as absolutely and totally out of order and abnormal. That is, the suffering, the tests, the trial, the temptations, these are extraordinary, abnormal, and out of character with the real life. And this isn't true. These are characteristics of the real life in Jesus Christ. They're not characteristics of the abnormal, but characteristics of the normal. I think that we should adopt the true attitude, the biblical attitude revealed to us in God's holy word, and here especially by Peter, towards suffering and persecution. We understand from verses 13 and 14 that it is a way of being and becoming Christ-like. Peter said, "You are sharing what Christ suffered, so rejoice in it." And when we think of that statement, we're simply sharing what Christ himself experienced. We need to ask another question. What would a non-suffering Jesus have been? What would a man have been who came into this world claiming to be the essence, and not only the essence, but very God of God? What would he presented to us if he had simply come into the world as a hail fellow, well met? If Jesus had come to the burial place of Lazarus laughing and joking and shaking hands and saying, "Oh, don't worry about old Lazarus, he'll just rot and he'll get out someday." We ought to look on the positive side of things, Mary and Martha. You know, and if Jesus had simply said, "Well, you got to go along to get along, and I know I'm with this group of people, and when in Rome does the Romans do, and we don't want to buck the current and go against the tide," and all the other sayings that we've manufactured to give ourselves a place of neutrality in a sin-cursed earth that doesn't need people with neutrality but needs people with conviction. If Jesus has had no conviction, could have been just pushed from pillar to post by everything that came along, what kind of example, what would he have accomplished? What could have been done? The writer of Hebrews tells us that even Jesus, the perfect Son of God, was made perfect. That is, a perfect intermediary, intercessor between us and God, because he suffered. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 17. "Wherefore in all things it behooved him to be made like unto his brethren." That is, like unto me and you. It behooved Jesus to be made like you and made like me. "That he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make reconciliation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself hath suffered, being tempted, he is able to succor them that are tempted." Now what did Paul say about Jesus? Well, it says that God made him like you and me. God made him with nerve endings that when some instrument was pushed against his flesh, it would create pain. God could have created his son without the ability to feel pain, but he didn't. And Jesus bled. And not only was Jesus subject to physical abuse, to the whipping and to the crowning with thorns and to the initial crucifixion on the cross, but Jesus was made like you and me in that he suffered the verbal abuse and the misunderstanding and confusion that existed even among his own disciples. I think Jesus hurt in heart and mind. He was made like us. And he himself suffered. We read along with Brother Goodwin of the temptation that he suffered, because that made him a merciful and faithful high priest in all things pertaining to God, to make reconciliation for the sins of the people. I think it prepares us for Christ's coming. You know, I believe that Jesus came, and all the hope of my salvation depends upon the fact that Jesus came. And I believe also that Jesus is coming. And my bodily redemption, my existence as a human being in mind, body, and spirit after I have gone into the grave or have been raptured depends upon this coming of Jesus Christ. But I also know that when Jesus comes, I will be called to stand before him in judgment. And Peter says that we ought to suffer whatever suffering and persecution comes our way, so that when the time comes for the manifestation of his, that is Christ's glory, you may be triumphantly happy. Now notice that phrase. Go ahead and suffer. Go ahead and take your stand. Go ahead and bear the persecution so that when Jesus is manifest in all of his glory, you may be triumphantly happy. What really can be said by that child of God who has so lived his or her life in neutrality as to be untouched by suffering and by persecution in this life? What shall we say unto Jesus? To have lived so accommodatingly in the world and with the world and by the world as to have never caused persecution nor suffering from the world. As strange as it may seem, we bear persecution, misunderstanding, because it brings true happiness to God's people and puts things in perspective and brings them back into focus. If you are suffering abuse because you bear the name of Christ, this is what Peter said, count yourselves blessed. Now this sounds to us totally impossible. But let me ask you this. Two men were dying. One on either side of Jesus. They themselves were being crucified. One of them believed in Jesus Christ. And one of them rejected Jesus Christ. One of them publicly stated that he was the Son of God. The other said he cannot be the Son of God. And the crowd railed on one and told him to shut up and evidently sympathized with the unbeliever and Christ rejecter. But the end of these men, the death of these men, which death would you prefer to die? The death of the martyr or the death of the traitor? And this is the kind of situation these Christian people faced. Peter said you're going to have fiery trials, and some of them literally had fiery trials in that they were tied to stakes and inflammable material stacked around them, and then they were burned to death. But if in taking our stand for Christ, if in bucking the world system, if in saying to the world, this far and no more, if that brings to us persecution, suffering, and ultimately martyrdom, shall we not die happier as martyrs than to die whimperingly and cowardly as a traitor to God? So suffering puts things in perspective, and through the Spirit of God, let us call upon Him and realize that not all the suffering that we experience is caused because we're Christians. Verse 15 says, but let none of you suffer as a murderer or as a thief or as an evildoer or as a busybody in other matters, other men's matters. Now, we have to admit that criminals suffer also, that unbelievers and ungodly people have suffering too. I've seen men who didn't believe in God die very tragically and over a long period of time with cancer. I've seen people who were crippled from birth, who never professed faith in God, no belief in Jesus Christ. And I have been
in some of the prison and jail systems of our country and seen people suffer, but they were suffering because they were criminals. And Peter said, do not let any of you, God's people, suffer because you have criminal attitudes and activities in your life.
Do not suffer as a murderer, literally a taker of life, a slayer of others,
or as a thief. And here a thief is one who steals by fraud or in secret, taking things do not belong to you, either fraudulently or in secret. Evildoer, that is, as a doer of evil things or as a busybody. And I check this word out very, very carefully.
And that's a rather unique word, busybody. And it sort of brings to mind activity that is very easy for us to comprehend. Busybody. The word that's translated busybody is a word that literally means an inspector or observer of other people's affairs. An inspector or observer of other men's affairs. Prying into the affairs of others. I'm reminded of a dear lady, and that's about as complimentary as I can be, who lived on the main street of a little town where I once pastored, who was the town's chief inspector, who would have and did go to another person's window, wipe away the fog and look inside and say, oh my, isn't it terrible what those people are doing? And who is the only human being in the history of the telephone who literally called so many people so often? She was a widow. She had just a few kinfolk in town, no business at all. But she called so many people so often that the dial fell off her telephone. One day she went to make a call, and it just rolled off in the floor. She came and called the telephone repairman, and she asked him, sir, why did my dial fall off in the floor? And he said, lady, I've never seen anything like this before in my life. The only conclusion I can come to is that you just wore it out. Oh, she was a wonderful inspector. A busy, 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 busybody. Now, if you get your nose punched for that, don't go running to God with the blood running out of your head and saying, oh God, why did this happen to me? I got my nose blasted. Terrible, terrible, terrible. Look, you have no right to call on God to stop that kind of thing. You stop it, okay? That's your job. In fact, I think we'd sort of rejoice. You know, if you're standing by and you see the busybody get his nose mashed, it's kind of, you know, gratifying. Maybe not to the spirit, but to the flesh, is it not? Or have you never said, oh, that's good enough for them? You've never said that. Then you, of course, have no problems with your flesh like I have with mine, I suppose. We should shun evil. Mind our own business. When do you get into trouble? Most of the time when you open mouth and insert foot, right? Which has become for
many people a completely and normal posture.
We rarely get into trouble when we mind our own business. Rarely. And it's seldom we get into trouble when we mind God's business. But when we mind our business and give ourselves to minding God's business, then whatever happens to us, we can rejoice and be happy in it. Because Peter said, however, if you suffer as a Christian, don't be ashamed. And this word ashamed here means to have the feeling which comes from doing a dishonorable deed. Just literally, guilt. That's what it translates into. Guilt. Now let's look at that. Yet if any man suffer as a Christian, that is because he does the things that are right and good and holy and righteous, then don't let him go around feeling guilty. But let him glorify God because of this. Don't be laden with guilt because you've taken your stand for right and you're made to suffer for it. Let us thank God and glorify God that He has chosen us to suffer for His dear name. For in that, we do indeed become like Jesus Christ, who when He was persecuted was as a lamb dumb before shearers.